Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, we have the buzziest of tandems, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, a.k.a. the Killer Bees. And in the red corner, here to try to stump the Killer Bees, here's Joe Stump King George.
King George!
Now, let's get ready to guess who said it.
All right, it's time for Who Said It. Now, Joel, I'm going to be honest with you. I heard last week's You Said It when Jeremy was absolutely freaking useless and you nailed all the picks.
Well, I mean, had to bail us out because he was talking a lot of smack.
I'm not going to lie to you. I think I might be as useful as Jeremy this week. But I'm going to try. I'm going to give you my best effort, and I'm not going to try to derail you the way it did seem Jeremy tried to derail you once or twice, particularly on that second choice last week. But it's time for Who Said It, and we hand the mic over to the Stump Master.
All right, number one, here we go. Dave Tepper also brought his first wife and her family to these pro days. I mean, that's how many people from the Panthers contingent are showing up. I'll tell you what, I could not care less. For context, he's divorced and brought his second wife.
BK. I'm going to go BK because BK is witty. BK has a personality. BK is savvy with the way he kind of pre-constructs some of the things that he's going to bring to the table in a creative way. And I'm a big fan of BK's. And I believe that I may or may not have heard this conversation on the way home one day. And so, for those reasons and more, Pat, I'm going to say BK.
Joel was very, very fast on the buzzer, speaking with a lot of conviction. There's no way I would go against Joel here. He hit that like it was like Family Feud. Bam! He hit that buzzer really fast. So, I get the feeling Joel has heard this before. We're going to go with BK.
Yeah, Dave Tepper also brought his first wife and her family to these pro days. I mean, that's how many people from the Panthers contingent are showing up. I'll tell you what, I could not care less.
Thank you, BK.
I could not care less is one of those BK key phrases. He didn't say that like once a show.
You know, it was one of those where I almost cut it off, but I felt like it was too generic. Maybe I made a mistake. But I think he would have known it anyways, Joel.
Yeah, I knew it because because I remember chuckling in the car when he said he brought his first one.
Yeah. All right, number two. I'm not that hairy. You make it sound like I'm a grizzly bear.
Where's the context on this one?
To be honest, I don't have the context
on
this
one. You said you were going to have it, now you don't. So again,
on some of them.
Rules on the fly.
Some context, not always.
Okay, Stumper.
He did that because he wanted to make sure he was going to do his best to make sure you did not get this one.
I mean, Jake goes to Doc Linville. Does that mean he's not hairy? I don't know.
I don't think I'd consider Jake to be hairy.
Now, who's hairy on the station? Is Paul? I mean, I would think that he manscapes.
Definitely think Paul manscapes.
No question. I don't think, is Lance? This is weird. I don't. Who would you consider? I mean, PK and PC, you got to bring this to something to the table here because I'm thinking who would think that people think that they're hairy?
You know, it's like I don't think it's Jake or BK, and I don't think Cody's all that hairy either. So it kind of.
So let's take the wheelhouse out of the equation. This ain't you, right? Because, don't put it past Joe to throw the fast one then.
No. I did not. I will not pull Pat when Pat's on.
What about Branham? Ah, the silence again.
I'll tell you what. Branham's on the table when he's not here now.
Okay. All I'm going to say is if Branham said it, you should know because you work with him.
You think I listen to what Branham says?
That's part of why
the show works. I mean, seriously, let's be real. I'm going to say that Paul manscapes. And Paul could be furry. I don't know. I'm going to say Paul. Because I don't think it's the wheelhouse.
What about the bench? What about the bench guys?
Is this a
Granato thing?
Granato could be in the mix here. But we don't get context on this one. Okay, I think it's between Granato and Paul. Man.
I hope I didn't just throw a monkey wrench at all.
Yeah, I think it's Paul.
You want to go with Paul? All right, we'll go with Paul.
I'm not that hairy.
Is that Paul?
You make it sound like I'm like a grizzly bear.
All right.
I remember the context now.
One for two. Well, gee, thanks. That helps me a bunch.
Oh, yeah, because I'm supposed to give you the context. They were talking about Jake taking his shirt off at the pool while he's in Vegas. That's too obvious.
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
All right, number three.
Boy, we're feisty today.
We are. I have a pink sport coat, like a bright pink sport coat.
Cody Stutes didn't bring it on the trip. Cody Stutes wearing it on the way to he's going to Vegas, but he didn't bring it, but that's what he owns.
I have a pink sport coat. Like a bright
suck it.
Pink sport
two out
coat.
Of three right now. Rolling. Bing, bang, boom.
Man, when you know him, you know him.
Hot stuff.
I'm not going to let Pat screw it up.
Cody's had that pink sport coat for a while. No, Joel and I were both getting that one. That you weren't getting that one past any of us.
Nope, because I think we were both in the car at that time.
All right, number four. No context on this one, but it's short. I love cane sauce. I'd bathe in it if I could.
Okay, now, we can think about this one, all right? But I'm just going to tell you, the sauce king is Cody Stutes. I've said this and known this for a long time. This dude has recipes for how to mix multiple sauces at fast food restaurants to get alternative sauces. This is a sauce king. So I know that has to factor in. Right off the top, that's my first inclination, is that Cody has to be considered because he is the sauce king.
Okay, so my other consideration for that was Lance. Because Lance is another guy who's has the food taste.
True, he's a foodie.
And is it, you know, would the Stump Master go Cody back to back?
Well, good call. Very, very good call. Something to be, well, first of all, the Stump Master would think he's being clever, and he might try and throw that monkey wrench in there. So I don't put anything past Stump anymore once he gave him the billing that he gave himself in the billboard for this entire segment.
Plus, you know, Lance can get over the top, you know, I would bathe in it. Like, I could see Lance getting over the top with that, but that it's also Cody, when he comes to the food takes, he comes in hard and heavy with the food takes. So,
could this be the Red Baron? I'm trying to be nice.
I don't know. Jake is such a big Chipotle guy. I don't know that he has time for Cane's, because Jake would eat Chipotle every day.
That's true.
It's amazing he can walk 3 minutes at a time because, you know, Chipotle. But
Joe, could this be Jake? Is he part of the mix of who could be in this? Just seeing if you might be so flustered back there that you might just cough up an answer so I don't have to think so hard on this.
I was like, do you expect me to answer that?
Yeah, maybe I did. You never know with you. I got to give it a shot. So Cody's the sauce master. Lance is a foodie, and Jake is, I'm trying to be nice, I'll leave that for you.
Jake is Captain Chipotle.
So what, you don't think Jake's in the mix here?
I've never heard Jake talk about Cane's. He always talks about Chipotle.
Well,
who
have you heard talk about Cane's?
I don't know if it's so much as who I've heard. It's just that Jake is always talking about Chipotle. He talks
I get that.
So, I'm kind of with you. You know, I'm coming down between Cody and Lance. I think is where this is coming down to.
Okay. And you're not leaning one way or the other. I know you make a good point about using the same guy back to back, but that's been done before too. I just always give Cody credit as being the sauce master, but I'm...
So let's roll with Cody.
No, because you do make a point that would he use them back to back?
It's decision time.
You know, he is a stunt master. He does try to find ways to trick you up. So I do think it's possible you could get the double letter here in Wordle. So if Cody is the guy you like the most, you know he's the sauce guy, let's go with Cody.
Okay. Cody's the answer.
I love cane sauce. I'd bathe in it if I could.
Joe George...
I got to tell you, I am actually stumped at that one because, they don't have cane sauce at Chipotle.
Shout out to Andrew for having a good poker face since he pulled that one for me.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right, number five, 2-2.
Thanks, Joe.
He hunts and fishes. He's a redneck. It's really true. Hunt and fish, you're a redneck.
That was on the bench.
Yes, it was. I knew I had heard it.
And wait, say it again, because I'm trying to remember this conversation. John Lance had this conversation where, you know, John was like, well, so this makes him a redneck. And yeah, so say the quote again.
He hunts and he fishes. He's a redneck. It's really true. Hunt and fish. Yeah, you're a redneck.
I think it was in relation to something in the Midwest, or at least he was going back to his Midwest roots, talking about that's how you define a redneck. I think Granato was the one that was talking. I heard this, too. I know I heard it. I was trying to remember where I heard it. And you're right. I'm trying to think of, and I can't ask the stumper for the context, even though I was told previous to the segment I could ask the context. I'm going to say Granato because I know I heard the conversation, and I know you're right, Pat. It was the bench.
I'm pretty sure it was Granato also. I recall the conversation being where one of them was saying, well, wait, because he hunts and fishes, that makes him a redneck? And it was like, yeah. And I want to say that John was the one who said yes. So I'm with you. I think this is Granato.
Okay. Final answer.
Is it he hunts and he fishes? He's a redneck.
Why not make you a
it's
redneck?
It's really true.
Fish?
It is, yeah.
So all your friends who hunt and fish are all
they're
rednecks.
They're all rednecks, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, hunt and fish. Yeah, you're a redneck, pretty much.
3 out of 5.
Joel left.
Why did he leave?
He's so excited.
I'm like, why did he leave? We got it right. Why did he leave?
No, he's excited. He's celebrating. He's gloating.
He's partying.
Yeah, he's partying.
Fist in the air.
Yes. He accomplishes so little during the day that this is the only thing that he celebrates.
I do find it amazing that, I mean, look, Joel is competitive on a level that is probably more so than anybody else at the station, but he is competitive about every single little thing. And when I said earlier about if he doesn't win this, like his weekend is ruined, I was not exaggerating in the slightest. This sets his weekend. He wins this game, and he goes into the weekend like he just won the gold medal. He loses this, and he just got cut from the JV team.
Honestly, it kind of is starting to ruin my weekend, because now I want to ruin his on purpose.
Now Joe is going to get hyper-competitive, and this is going to become the stump master against Joel. It's going to become like a one-on-one battle. You've got to make sure you don't freeze Jeremy out of this. Or render him the guy who's just going to make comments on the outside is watching the two of you go mano a mano for who said it. All right, coming up next, who are the best skill position groups in the NFL? How many of these might be overrated? Who's underrated? And how much work do the Texans have to do to get in that group? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 Live from Stadium Swim, Circa Casino and Resort in Las Vegas.
This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank. And live from Circa Casino and Resort in Las Vegas, filling in for Jeremy Branham, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, so Jeremy Branham, who is out on assignment, per se, getting ready to call Sweet 16 action for the Cougs against the Canes. He will join us in the next segment, talk about the Cougars in the Sweet 16. Also, we did learn something. Andrew Carlson is the enemy of the Killer Bees.
Okay,
Andrew Carlson.
Why now?
Was Team Stumpy.
Yeah, what was that? I just saw that on Twitter. Team Joe. Come on, AC. I thought we've come a long way. I come on, man.
Apparently, you know.
Why, just because he gets to chase the ladies in Vegas instead of doing his producer show requirements on Saturdays? I mean, that's brutal.
Producer blood is thicker than water, apparently. Also, he got up and left. I have no idea where he went.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Well, let me just say this. I was talking to Joe during the break after taking the victory lap that I well deserved, and the fact that Branham, who was talking a whole bunch of mess going into last week when he basically poked holes in our ship and I had to keep it from capsizing and get the win last week. After last week and this week, I am the undisputed champ. The champ is here. and I should be getting a new open like Stump Mitchell has for his, because they're the king and the crown rests firmly right here with me and nobody else. And no one's going to take that away from me.
I am not going to attempt to take your crown. I will say that I am happy that I was able to provide more assistance to you this week.
Yes, you were.
Than
yep.
Jeremy did last week. Jeremy
good teamwork.
Was basically a saboteur. I feel like I actually contributed, so I feel good about that. But, yes, you should be wearing the crown very happily, very proudly. Although I will tell you, I was talking to Joe during the break, and I feel like he has a newfound dedication to trying to beat you in this game. It is going to become very much a mano a mano, the stump and the king going at it. So just might need to know that your producer, he's coming loaded for bear next week. It will not be easy.
I mean, he looks the part. So, I mean, if that's what he's going to bring to the table, then bring it. I mean, I take all challengers, and I'm not scared. That's fine with me. I mean, again, I have and always will be the king of that game, so I'm proud to take the challenge.
Have to be careful to make sure that Jeremy does not sabotage you and join Team Stumpmaster.
Stumpmaster, that's good. That's a good one, yeah. He didn't like Stinky Stump.
No, I don't blame him for not.
But he walked into that stump with some of the other things he was babbling around that with the Stinky Stump. But you know, now maybe the Stump Master is like the Thigh Master. We'll just call Joe the Stump Master. That's fine. Stump Master J is what we'll call him. Stump Master J. How about that? By the way, Miami's playing Villanova right now in the women's, and it's on the TV in here. Isn't Miami the team with the twins that are like Instagram phenomenons?
Yes, they are, and they're the ones who apparently have been in the crosshairs of the NCAA and made some videos basically telling the NCAA they can, you know, kiss their patooties and whatnot.
Wow. This after, what was it, a couple months ago that the Wisconsin volleyball team decided to go shirtless in social media, and that was a massive stir. Social media's getting out of hand, huh? Who knew?
Yeah, and they were, let's say, proud and flamboyant about telling the NCAA that they can kiss off. So I always feel, you know, look, I don't look at the NCAA as anything other than a very corrupt organization. But because they are a corrupt organization, and until further notice, they kind of control your life as a student athlete, probably best not to antagonize them, lest they find a reason to mess with you.
Yeah, look, I mean, as much as we crap all over with good reason Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball, the NCAA, I mean, just they have so many different moneymakers that actually do their job for them, and they can't get out of their own way. They keep completely screwing things up when you think that all they got to do is kick back and count the dollars. But, you know, seriously, every time now they got the new what Mark Emmerich left and the new guy already – last night decides that NIL might be getting out of hand, and he might go to government to get help. Like, that's the last place you need to go to get help for the NCAA. Like, do your job. It's that simple.
So isn't it on brand for the NCAA, though? Hey, it's my first week on the job, and I'm already going to tell you I can't do my job, and I need the government to do my job for me. I've been saying for over a decade, the NCAA needs to be abolished. And there's really no reason why, at least among the Power Five, don't want to upset Mike Oresko, let's say Power Six, among the Power Five conferences, they can't create their own governing body. Why the G5 schools can't make their own governing body or pull together and make one. The NCAA has become a laughingstock. It is such a corrupt organization to the point where if we said, give me the most corrupt sports organizations in the world, is it IOC, FIFA, NCAA?
It's a pretty good call. FIFA was way up there for the longest of times on a pedestal all by themselves, and now they're cleaning all that up. But, yeah, I mean, well, I'll tell you what, Pat, you could still throw the NFL in there the way that Goodell and those guys protect the corrupt ownership of Dan Snyder and some of the other things that they can't handle right. Major League Baseball with the way they didn't handle the cheating scandal right. I mean, there's a Fab Five for you right there.
I mean, think about, you know, I mean, look, in the NFL, what they've done, what they've done. Stop making me laugh. What they've done with, you know, how they protected Snyder, how they really protected the owner in Carolina until they just couldn't protect him anymore, how they continue to put out these hideous officials, and there's no consequences for actions. But, you know, if a player wears the wrong socks, that's fine. If you don't have your mouth guard in, that's fine. If you dare criticize one of these hideously underqualified officials, that's fine. The owners can say whatever they want. Players can't say anything. And to think that they didn't make the top three. that's how corrupt sports organizations can be. It's pretty crazy when you think about it.
No, it really is. And you know, again, you're sitting on, as much as they keep dabbling with getting the national championship, you know, decided the right way for college football, I think that they're finally on the right track to getting the right amount of teams involved in everything. We know that March Madness is just a cash cow that continues to just print money. And all you got to do is get out of the way and just let it do its thing, as we talked about and witnessed last night and will probably witness throughout the weekend. Yet they just find ways to try and muddle everything up and get in their own way. And that's sad because, you know, from a standpoint of revenue generating with the big sports of football and basketball, they're sitting on cloud nine.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what, like, when we get into what organizations are the worst. One of the things that makes the NFL unique is the fact that it is such a it really is a massive share. Everything is shared. I mean, when it comes to how they divide revenues, they're probably the most communistic of all sports leagues because they split everything. Whereas baseball, every team kind of does their own thing. They have a little bit of revenue sharing, but everybody kind of controls their own ability to generate funds. And, you know, with FIFA and the IOC, they take funds and inappropriately designate them to various countries or to various figureheads in order to get an event in a particular city or country or whatnot. The money trails are always very interesting when you get into who did what in these organizations. Now, we got a little off course because we were going to talk about position groupings with the NFL. Who's hot? Who's overrated? Who's underrated? What do the Texans have to do to see get into a top 15 position grouping? So what we'll do is we're going to push that off to 2:45. We'll do that after we speak to Jeremy Branham. Jeremy Branham, voice of the Cougs, an usual member of the Killer Bees, is going to join us in the next segment. From Kansas City, he's going to be talking to us about the Cougs and the Canes. We'll get to Jeremy coming up next. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We're live from Stadium Swim, Circuit Casino and Resort in Las Vegas.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank. And live from Circa Casino and Resort in Las Vegas, filling in for Jeremy Branham, here's Patrick Creighton.
So I am at Stadium Swim at Circa Casino and Resort in Las Vegas. Joel is in the Veritex Studio in Houston. And joining us now on the HRMP guest line, from Kansas City, he is the voice of the Cougs and also a member of the Killer Bees. He is Jeremy Branham. What's going on, Jeremy?
Not a lot. Just getting ready to leave to this game. I halfway expected that rejoin to say, and in for Jeremy Branham, who's live from Kansas City, which you ended up doing, PC. So you kind of filled in the blank for the big voice guy. And it's kind of weird being a guest on the Killer Bees. I'll be honest with you. I think it's the first time I've ever done this.
Nobody fills in for the blank. Get it straight.
Are you feeling like you're sitting in the back seat of your own car right now?
Yeah, a little bit. After too many Gentle Bends.
Well, at least then you have a good reason. Listen, Sweet 16, the Cougs and the Canes, looking forward to a great matchup tonight. How healthy have you seen Marcus Sasser? How does he look?
Yeah, I just have to go with what he said. You know, he said yesterday at the press conference that he's getting closer and closer to 100%. Said that he expects to be 90%. You know, we saw him play against Auburn, which I thought it was a tell of two halves for Marcus Sasser. In the first half, look, he was scoring both halves, but I thought he defended way better in the second. Samson said, look, you're gonna be out there. You got to defend, kind of challenge him a little bit to move a little bit better laterally. I thought second half Marcus Sasser was close to 100% Marcus Sasser. So I feel good about where Marcus is at and where Marcus Sasser's groin's at.
Jeremy, first of all, thanks for joining the show. Big fan of your work. Joe George with a great get. Wasn't sure we could get you after all your time with Randy McAvoy and Mark Berman. But I'm interested in your takeaways from this matchup personally. I was talking to Pat about it. Miami rebounds well, but Houston has size. I think the big difference for me is a guy like Jairus Walker, because I don't think any of the Miami bigs have the athleticism and, as you and I have talked about, the ability to stretch the floor from three like Jairus Walker does. This is a game to me that's screaming for him to step up and do something that Miami doesn't have an answer for.
Yeah, I think that's I think he is an X factor for Houston. I think that's a good point, because you look at Miami and their four man's Jordan Miller, who's basically a guard. Now, he's a big guard. He's 6'7", 195. You mentioned the size advantage that Jairus Walker's had has over him. And most of the talk, just listening to some of the commentary about Miami Houston, well, how is Houston going to guard Jordan Miller and being the mismatch that he is at the four? And to your point, okay, well, how are they going to defend Houston? Because Jairus Walker also has some perimeter skills. Jairus Walker can also knock down the three-pounder. And like you mentioned, he's got about 40 pounds on him. So I think that's going to be a critical matchup between in this game tonight. And then the rebounding, too. I think the rebounding is very critical. Which game isn't, right? But you point to Miami, who really in the offensive side of things, on the offensive glass, just dominated Indiana on the boards. Norchid Omir was outstanding in that game, the amount of offensive rebounds and second chance points he had. So I think the matchup at the four between Walker and Miller is something that to keep an eye on, especially early. And then the rebounding. If the Cougars can keep Miami off the offensive glass, we know the Cougars are pretty good at forcing their opponents to miss shots. This is the best offense they're going to be playing all year. But that's, you got to close out the possessions. If you force Miami into some missed shots, you got to close out the possession with a defensive rebound. So the four, it will be a big key in this game, and the rebounding is a huge key.
Jeremy, one of the big things from the game UH played against Auburn was shot blocking. Well, they have like 12, 13 blocks as a team, and Jairus Walker had six of those. And that intimidation factor, when guys go to the rim of, hey, is there somebody coming from my blind side who's going to come and swat this out of my hands? We know the Cougs can block shots. Does Miami have that kind of shot-blocking capability, in your opinion, or is that a big advantage the Cougars have?
If you look at it from each side of the floor, let's start with the Cougars on the defensive side. You're right. The Cougars have some dudes that can protect the rim, whether it's Jairus Walker, whether it's Jawan Roberts, even off the bench. Reggie Chaney's a pretty good rim protector. If they go deep into the bench, Javier Francis might be their best rim protector. Kelvin Sampson joked around with some of the media asking about Jairus Walker's, dominant defensive performance of six blocks. He's like, well, half of those blocks he was covering up his own mistakes. He's chasing down a defender or an offensive player that beat him one-on-one and then got him on the backside, coming back and blocking the ball at the rim. Houston does have the rim protection. I'm curious with Miami with what they want to do offensively. They spread it out. They try to get their bigs on the perimeter, which takes the big away from the rim and it makes it difficult to protect that rim. I think Houston's going to try to keep Miami from penetration. I think that they're going to err on the side of living with a three as opposed to allowing the dribble penetration to get to that rim, because they do spread you out. And then on the other end, the Cougars' offensive end, they don't. Miami doesn't have great rim protection. We mentioned that they go small. They play four guards most of the time, don't have a deep bench. Mir, who's, again, a brute, he's 6'7", 250, he's a big dude, but doesn't really have that rim protection. And what they do defensively, they don't really love to contest at the rim if they feel that they're in a weakness. If they feel like they might foul, they're willing to live with an easy layup as opposed to fouling. So they don't attack block shots nearly as much as Houston does.
Jeremy, I'm interested. Wong is a guy that I know, comes in highly touted, conference player of the year and all that. And last year people were talking about him, especially in the tournament. But I'm interested in your opinion on how they're going to match up with him. Is that, Sasser, but because of the groin, maybe they go a different direction? He seems like, because he has a little size and he is extremely shot happy, but he's quick, I'm curious how they're going to defend him.
Yeah, my best guess would be Tremont Mark, because you're right about that size. I think that the Cougars, they're comfortable with where Marcus is at. And Marcus, I think, is one of the best two-way players in the country. Mm-hmm. I think it's the reason he's an All-American, because he can get it done offensively. But then what he brings to you defensively as well. I think that not that they're going to hide him, because Wuga Poplar is really good too, their third guard. But I think we'll probably see Sasser, at least starting the game, probably more on Poplar or Pack than we will see on Wong. And you mentioned the size and the length that Wong has. Mm-hmm. You know, 6'4", but has a long reach. He can really get a shot off against anybody. I think we're going to see Tremont Mark on him, especially early, try to give him some trouble, because Tremont Mark's long too. Actually, he's a couple inches on Wong, and then, you know, he has the length as well. But wouldn't surprise me if you see a rotation there. You know, if Tremont Mark is getting beat by Wong, okay, let's see what Jamal Shedd has. Okay, let's see what Marcus Sasser has. But I would imagine they're going to try to match size for size early.
We're talking with original Killer Bee, Jeremy Branham, voice of the Houston Cougars, with us on the HRMP guest line. He's out in Kansas City getting ready to call Cougars basketball Sweet 16 against the Miami Hurricanes. Jeremy, a lot of times, look, we want to see Miami. We'd like to get these games up into the high 70s, into the 80s. The Cougs usually like to play games kind of in the high 60s, low 70s. What kind of tempo do you think we get in this game, and what tempo do you feel favors the Cougars?
It's easier to slow down and speed somebody up. I think that Houston wants to play to their tempo. I think that sometimes Houston gets a little bit of a knock on how fast they're willing to play because of their pace. Whenever you look at KenPom, it's one of the lowest in the country. A big part of that is because they force the teams that they're playing into shots late in the shot clock, which, by math, limits the amount of possessions you're going to get in the game. Cougars will be selective when they try to run. If they feel like they have an advantage on, you know, rebound, they have the numbers, they'll run on you. But if it's not there, and they'll err on the side of setting up their half-court offense. They believe in their half-court offense. So they'll err on the side of that as opposed to running and gunning and taking quick shots. So the Cougars would be happy if, like you mentioned, it's a game in the 60s, whereas Miami's probably going to want to get it up into the 80s. But it's much easier to slow somebody down than it is to speed somebody up.
Jeremy, I'm interested. You know, we talked about when you and I were just chatting about Tremont Mark getting the assignment on Wong, and I started thinking about foul trouble, and that leads me to depth. I mean, you know, we know how deep U of H is and can be, but, you know, how big of an advantage is the depth, and how much of a factor could it be if foul trouble does come into play?
I think this is one of the rare matchups where the Cougars actually have the advantage when it comes to depth. So Kelvin Sampson, once you get to March into the tournament, he doesn't play a very deep bench. He only goes to you to, you know, kind of rest his starters around the media timeouts, foul trouble, which we know Houston got into some foul trouble against Auburn. But they have some guards that they can hit some big shots. You know, we saw Emmanuel Sharp hit a couple of big shots. Reggie Chaney, who was one of the bigs off the bench, was a starting center for a Final Four team a couple of years ago. Jim Larrañaga in Miami, they do not have a very deep bench. I mean, it's their starting five, and then maybe Anthony Walker, maybe Vinsley Joseph. So, you know, going into games, you're kind of wondering, okay, is this going to be a tight whistle? Is it going to be a loose whistle? Usually a tight whistle is tough for Houston because they get into foul trouble. They have to go to their bench, lots of free throws, things like that. I thought it was a tight whistle against Auburn. But I think the Cougars are deeper than Miami. Larrañaga does not play a deep bench, so I think the Cougars have a pretty good advantage if you have to play a lot of players in tonight's game.
All right, Jeremy, I got a pretty good idea of who you're predicting to win this game, but give us your prediction and how the game gets there.
I'm going to pull the Kirk Herbstreit. I'm calling the game. I will not give predictions of the game that I'm calling.
All right, well, then tell me this. What are we looking for as Cougar fans that want the Cougs to win? What's the difference makers tonight? I mean, if the Cougs win, why?
I think points in the paint. I think points in the paint will be an area that you can look at after the game that could be a determining factor for a variety of different reasons. One, the Cougar defense, like I think they're going to try to keep Miami out of the lane, because you look at what Miami's able to do, where they'll spread you out, like we were saying earlier, and they'll spread you out, try to create some one-on-one advantages, and their guards usually have the speed advantage, and they'll beat you to the rim, and they'll finish at the rim, and all of a sudden, they got a layup going the other way. So I think that the Cougars are going to have to do a good job of keeping Miami out of the lane. I think they're going to err on the side of willingness to give up three-pointers as opposed to allowing that, you know, dribble drive, penetration, getting some easy buckets. But then also the offensive rebounding. Because you look at what Miami did to Indiana, they feasted on offensive rebounds. They were able to dominate the Hoosiers on second chance points, namely Omer. Omer was able to grab tons of offensive rebounds, had a lot of easy points on second chance opportunities, and that's something the Cougars want to do too on the offensive end. One of the calling cards for this team is offensive rebounding. You know, get on the glass offensively, get some second chance points, but then on top of that, Houston wants to take advantage of their size, advantage with Jairus Walker going against Miller. They like Jawan Roberts in the post as well. So I think points in the paint will be a pretty big stat between Miami and Houston.
Hey, before one favor, I don't want souvenirs or anything, but one favor, can you get the voice of college basketball that is a Cougar, Jim Nance, and you in a picture on social media, the future voice of college basketball, Jeremy Branham, and then maybe have him say, "Hey, I listened to the Killer Bees."
No, I don't do that stuff. I don't ask for pictures of anybody.
Well, someone can
get
it.
You know that.
Come on, I know. But someone can get it. It'd be a great shot.
I don't bother people. I'm not like, "Hey, Jimmy, let's do a picture." You know that. That's not me.
Well, Barry Warner's not there, but someone can make that happen. You guys are the voices from the Cougs. I love it.
I like being behind the scenes, back against the wall, away from everything.
It sounded dirty. Get a win tonight, will you?
I'll try my best.
Jeremy Branham, voice of the Cougs, Killer Bees. Jeremy, have a great call today, man. Good luck to the Cougs.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on my show. Y'all have a good one. I'll talk to y'all next week.
All right, we will let Jeremy out of the backseat of his own car now.
Hey, in the words of Jeff Spicoli, if he's here and we're here, isn't it our show? Just throwing it out there.
Leafs for the next 15 minutes.
Okay.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We're live from Stadium Swim, Circuit Casino Resort in Las Vegas.
You're listening to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank. And live from Circa Casino and Resort in Las Vegas, filling in for Jeremy Branham, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, final 10 minutes of the show before the Wheelhouse enters the party cabana here at Stadium Swim and takes you till 7 o'clock tonight. Joel, the Texans have had issues with talent at the skill position. I don't think anybody is going to debate the fact they don't have a whole lot of talent at the skill position, although you could say it's getting better. You're happy with Dameon Pierce. You're certainly happy with the pickup of Dalton Schultz. Picking up Robert Woods did not hurt. But they're a long way off from being at the top of the food chain in those skill position groupings. Mm-hmm. For example, Sports Illustrated put together a list of the 15 teams they thought have the best skill position groupings. And not a surprise, the San Francisco 49ers top of the list with Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk. I don't have an issue with them being number one. I feel like they're solidly far and away number one.
Ooh, I'm not going to go that far. Think about Philadelphia.
Who do you think's a rival?
Think about A.J. Brown. On one side, think about Smith on the other side from Alabama, the Heisman Trophy winner. Think about Goddard, a really, really, really good tight end. I think running back, I guess, is somewhat in question. And they lost one in free agency in Sanders, but they picked one up in free agency. I think Philadelphia's got a really, really good skill position room. I think the Chargers have Eckler's obviously not happy right now contract-wise, but when you add Eckler to Williams who's their longtime steady wide receiver, Keenan Allen, that's a really good one. I think there's some good ones out there. I think Miami, if you want to talk about Waddle and the Cheetah to start with, and then, yeah, your tight end is a free agent right now, but I would just throw those out there as possibilities.
So I feel like if we're not going to include injuries into the mix, Christian McCaffrey is probably number one because of the versatility, be able to backfield, be able to catch passes. Deebo ranks up there for me for the exact same reason. Yep, they can use him in so many different ways. I like Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. Neither one of those guys are as much of a dual threat as Deebo or C-Mac. And I think if the Eagles had a better running back, if they had a running back. Right now, that's kind of in flux. They might be in the number one. I like the Bengals group, mainly because I like their receivers. I'm not a big Joe Mixon fan, but Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd,
yeah.
I feel like, you know, those three guys as a receiver group, that might be the number one group of just receivers.
Yeah, and you look at what Kansas City did winning the Super Bowl. You start with Kelce because he's the top of everybody's list. And then you look at the fact that they made do with what they had and makeshift filling guys in different positions. Juju's now gone. Mecole Hardman is now gone. You know, they've got good running backs, but do they wow you enough to put them at a certain elite level? No, because their quarterback does. So I don't think they're in this conversation. But, you know, does Brandon Cooks added to C.D. Lamb, added to a dinged-up Tony Pollard, and then, you know, trying to figure out the tight end position, Dallas got better, but they're not in the mix. I think we pretty much narrowed it down in terms of teams that would be in the conversation.
Where are you on the Vikings? Because Justin Jefferson is an all-world receiver.
Yeah.
I think Dalvin Cook is a very good back.
They're shopping him right now, too, which is shocking to me.
I don't know that I'd put Dalvin Cook as an elite back, but I think he's a very good back.
Well, I think he could be, but I think that injuries and maybe a little bit of want to sometimes gets in the way.
You look at the – so to compare the Vikings with Jefferson, Cook, T.J. Hockenson, and K.J. Osborne versus the Raiders with Devontae Adams, Josh Jacobs, Hunter Renfro, and Jacoby Myers, I feel like – I mean – for the Vikings, you've got Jefferson, who's amazing. But is Devontae Adams also not amazing? I feel like the Raiders might actually have a little bit of an edge there.
But you're missing pieces. So if Minnesota still had Thielen, now I'm talking about Minnesota a whole lot more because they added T.J. Hockenson, and now they've got everybody everywhere, skill position-wise. When you're talking about the Raiders, you lost Darren Waller, who's a top-five tight end in the league when healthy. And when they traded him to the Giants, I think the Raiders changed, you know, everything in terms of being in that mix. I think, to me, it's got to be a complete set. That means you don't have everything but a running back or everything but the tight end. You've got everything. And I think that you're right. The Niners have versatility and they have everything. And especially when Kittle is basically overlooked because the two backs are the ones that can do so much passing and running. But when you have Ayuk on top of that, and even their slot receiver is really good. His name escapes me at the minute. But look, I think the Niners are extremely complete. But I think the Eagles are too. And I know they signed somebody in free agency to replace Sanders as a running back. But I really firmly believe that there is the haves and the have-nots, and there's about four or five teams that have.
This is the one that matters the most to the Texans because it's their division. The Jaguars get a returning Calvin Ridley to go with Christian Kirk. Evan Engram is coming off a career season. Travis Etienne and Zay Jones.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I don't think it's elite. I don't think it's in the top three. But I think it's definitely knocking on the door for consideration. I think it's pretty good. I mean, you know, I think that if you take Darren Waller and Saquon Barkley and expect they're both going to be healthy this year, and that's somewhat of a big expectation, but then – you know, you look at Shepard, you look at Galladay if they keep him. The Giants have the makings of a team that have a pretty darn good room too, but does that put them in the very top of the league? No, I think when you're talking top of the league, it's San Francisco, Philadelphia, the Chargers, you mentioned the Bengals, and I don't know if there's many. Look, I think the Jets are trying. The Jets running game doesn't do anything for me, so I think we narrowed it down pretty well.
What do the Texans have to do, in your opinion, to catch the Jaguars? Let's just stay in division.
Okay.
How do the Texans catch the Jaguars? Now, you have Robert Woods, you have Nico Collins, you have a John Mechie coming back. Obviously, Mechie unproven at the NFL level. Schultz is a big deal for them at tight end because they haven't had anybody who's as good as him, you know, really since Owen Daniels. Is picking up one of those top receivers in the draft this year get them in the ballpark when we're talking about the Jaguars?
It gets them closer. I want a true wide receiver one. I don't think that they have that, and I don't know that anybody in this draft is capable of giving that to them. I think that when you look at, you know, what Robert Woods still has left in the tank, and you look at the same tier receivers in this draft class, Jeremy and I have talked about it multiple times that he's not convinced there's a true wide receiver one in this entire draft class, and I tend to agree with him. So if that's the case, no matter who you draft makes your room better, but does it put you at a different level to compete with a Jacksonville that puts a Kirk in the slot? And like you said, you know, gets a guy that has the potential to be not only a wide receiver one, but a true game changer on the outside for them. That was a very savvy pickup in a trade with the Falcons. And Ingram, who has been such a massive safety valve for Trevor Lawrence's development, I don't think it does. I think that it takes more than whoever they draft in this draft, and I don't know that they're coming out of this draft with a wide receiver one.
I would hope that, you know, whether it's a Jordan Addison, whether it's a JSN, whether it's Quentin Johnson, whichever guy they want, because I really do think they need to go wide receiver 12. Whatever guy they come out with, I hope is a guy who develops into a one, and then you've got Collins and Woods and Mechie, who I think might wind up being the best of that three, and Schultz, the backfield with Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary. I think they can be good. They might be able to get.
No, you're right. We got to wrap, second. Pat. We got to wrap. So we just want to give congratulations. 409 ending in 9723. You get the Frankie's Friday Fire and the gift card. We'll be calling you and contacting you. As a reminder, the text was the Padres are just the Yankees of the West Coast. Tons of big names, but never completed in the playoffs. So congratulations. You get the Frankie's Friday Fire. You'll be out there to check out frankiesitaliankitchen.com. But, Pat, always appreciate you, brother. Travel back safely.
Appreciate you guys having me. Time to hand it over to Jake, Cody, and BK. The Wheelhouse comes your way from the ESPN Party Cabana next.